Welcome back to Trends in Low Places, a comedic exploration of the dumbest stories of the day. I am one of your hosts, Mike Cushing.
And I am the bad to his bougie, Michael Howard.
I like that, sir. Well, Michael, I was up in Chicago this weekend.
Yes, you were. Yeah.
And we had three goals this weekend, right?
Yep.
We were going to go see John Wick Chapter 2.
Mm-hmm. Got that one.
We were going to go see, Run the Jewels, and we were going to re-record a podcast.
Yeah.
What's our batting average?
We're batting 333, which is
okay.
Respectable, but not
It'll get
in this
you into
context.
The All-Star game.
Yeah.
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 Probably can make the All-Star game, not the Hall of Fame. Michael, what happened?
Well, for Run the Jewels, I don't know the difference between Friday and Saturday, so screwed that one up pretty bad.
You didn't listen to Rebecca Black.
You got to get down on Friday, and I tried to get down on Saturday, and so we went to see John Wick on Friday. We're going to go see the show on Saturday, but apparently LP and Killer Mike had different schedules than us, so...
Weird.
So then we were like, well, hey... Got plenty of time. Let's record this podcast on Saturday. Yeah, that one didn't work out so hot either. A lot of audio issues, just random dropping of words. And I tried to put it together, but I didn't think you all would understand most of it. So we're going to run it back.
It was our first attempt at a live show, and it didn't go very good.
No.
But it didn't go very well. But maybe it's appropriate, Michael, because we talked a little bit about, President's Day. And how I misdated it last week, or I rather said that the very much made up idiot male holiday steak
the
and
Hallmark
a blow,
holiday
blowjob
of,
day,
yeah,
the Hallmark big steak holiday of steak and a blowjob day fell on, I guess, February 21st when I was wrong. We were both wrong on both fronts because President's Day was today, not tomorrow, and the silly holiday steak and a blowjob day falls on March 14th.
Correct. Yes. Yeah, President's Day always falls on the Monday, the third Monday of the month, which is for Lincoln's birthday and Washington's birthday. Lincoln's birthday, which is, I believe, February 12th, and Washington's birthday, which is technically February 22nd. So, but I learned something very interesting about Washington's birthday, and I say technically it's on the 22nd because when he was actually born, his mother thought it was February 11th.
Okay. That's quite a discrepancy.
Yeah. Yeah. In 1752, the UK finally decided to get aboard the Gregorian calendar train and move from the Julian calendar.
The classic. Yes.
Yeah. And so, the rest of Europe had switched over to the Julian calendar a long time ago, 1500 sometime. UK was a little late to adopt that one. What did I say?
Yeah.
What did I say?
You said the Julian calendar. You said the Julian.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Hey, they're on the right calendar.
They are now. Anyway, so George Washington was born on February 11th, and then in 1752, they said, hey, no, your birthday is now February 22nd, which seems kind of odd to me to just switch that. Yeah, yeah.
So you're saying George Washington has told a lie about his fucking birthday.
Well, I mean, is it a lie if you don't know the truth?
Long con.
Yeah. So yeah, so while looking into that, it got me very interested in this old style versus new style dates is what they call it. There's actually a Wikipedia entry called old style versus new style.
Okay.
Yeah, so...
Everyone hates the younger generation.
And the most interesting part of this whole thing is that, as you know, Kush, we added Alaska much after the United States began in the 1860s, 1867.
Seward's Folly.
Yes. Well, Alaska was originally owned by Russia, and Russia stayed on the Julian calendar for a long time. I don't know. They may still be on it. They're Russia,
backwards.
I don't know
flux.
What they're doing over there. So when we purchased Alaska from Russia, we said, hey, you need to be on this calendar that everyone else is on.
Even though you're
barely part of us. You're like way the hell up there in Canada, but you need to be on our calendar. And at the same time, they switched over the international dateline. So Alaska was now on the wrong side of the international dateline. So these poor Alaskan people, they went to bed on Friday, September 2nd, and they woke up to Friday, September 14th. So they lost 11 days. And on top of that, they had to have two Fridays.
That's the worst day to get two of. Maybe Monday's worse. But did they have to work two Fridays in a row?
Yeah. I imagine that they did. I'm not really sure. It doesn't go into a lot of details on the Wikipedia article about the poor workers of the day, the whalers and fishermen.
The plight of the common man, always ignored by Wikipedia.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know how many people were actually in Alaska at the time. And I assume, like, most of the Inuits and the Eskimos and stuff probably could give two shits about what day it was of the week.
Right. Because
they're probably just like, hey, I need food to eat. I don't really care whether it's Saturday or Monday, but...
Yeah, I'm just going out to get stuff.
Yeah. For the people who had a regular 9-to-5 job, I'm sure it was quite the change. Be like, oh, hey, it was Friday and now it's Friday. Although I guess Rebecca Black was pretty upset.
Yeah, she's very confused. Yeah. It's like, when do I get down?
You gotta get down and then you get down again. So.
So what year is that, Michael?
1867.
Okay.
So like, yeah, so there's
probably some 9-to-5.
Not that long ago.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna take you back a little further because this actually reminds me of something that I think one of my coworkers shared in like our company chat. Michael, are you familiar with the phantom time hypothesis?
I am not. No.
Okay. Well, what if I told you that nearly 300 years of world history, specifically European history and the Gregorian calendar, were completely fake and made up?
So they just, like, don't exist?
Just made them up.
But, so...
But they exist. That's your only counterpoint, right?
Yeah, but, like...
Like an idiot, that's all you can bring to the table.
I guess you're trying to make me disprove a negative.
Right.
So it's, yeah.
With disprove a negative of which you have no information about.
That's
so
true,
Michael,
I guess I just have to have faith that these years still exist.
Yes. So there is we've talked a little bit about conspiracy theories on this show, mostly, you know, regarding world domination, of which this one kind of fits into. So the Phantom Time Hypothesis is a historical conspiracy theory that was first posited by someone named Herbert Illig. And he says that
is this like a recent conspiracy theory or
published, it was published in 1991. So it was published in 1991, using a mix of like astronomy and tree ring dating and some discrepancies that this man felt were in the Islamic calendar and the advancement in the Middle Ages of maybe some of Muslim societies. But also he was looking back and he felt that to legitimize the claim of Otto III to the Holy Roman Empire, there was a conspiracy between Otto III, Pope Sylvester II, and possibly a Byzantine emperor to fabricate the entirety of the Anno Domini dating system so that they moved the time forward to the year 1000 and to legitimize Otto's claim to the throne of the Holy Roman Empire.
So how does it legitimize his claim to add years? I don't quite get it.
Well, so I'm glad you asked. So basically, Michael, are you feeling with Charlemagne?
Yes, the rapper.
Yes, Charlemagne the Rapper. Also, the inspiration for Sir Sean Connery to throw a bunch of birds into an oncoming Nazi fighter plane in The Last Crusade. He remembered as Charlemagne.
I'm not familiar with that movie.
You're not familiar with Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade?
Yeah, I don't remember. Wait, I don't understand how Charlemagne goes with Indiana Jones, because that happened in, like, Nazi times.
It did, but Sean Connery says, I suddenly remembered my Charlemagne. Let my armies be the rocks and the trees and the birds in the sky, Michael.
Okay, I'm familiar with the movie, but I guess I'm not that familiar with the movie that I know lines from.
Wow, okay. Well, your brain clearly is better than mine, because my brain is half movie quotes at this point. Well, anyway, Michael, according to this theory, Otto and Pope Sylvester, which is frankly hilarious.
Yeah, Pope Sylvester and then his Cardinals Tweety and Bugs Bunny.
So they forged the entirety of the Carolingian dynasty, including Charlemagne, through the use of illustrated manuscripts to make Otto's family seem like it had a greater lineage, including the founding of the Holy Roman Empire. So he
made up the founding of the thing that he was the head of.
Yes, essentially.
If it already existed, then how did he make it up in the past?
Listen, man, I don't know. So it might, yeah, we'll see. Okay, so basically he essentially created the Carolingian dynasty, which eventually would lead into the evolution of the kingdom of France and the Holy Roman Empire. But there is a little bit of, there's some basis to this, because Catholic monks back in the day, you know, they were one of the only people, basically they controlled reading and writing. They were one of the only sources of information. So they were super into creating illuminated manuscripts, you know, writing scripture.
Yep.
But in their free time, they also liked to create fictional shit in their illuminated manuscripts and just make stuff up. So they made a lot of fake manuscripts. Essentially, fake news has been around for a very long time, Michael.
But wait, so but wait, I thought fake these... news was the enemy of the American people, and the Americans did not exist then, so...
Michael, Americans have only always existed. It's the greatest country on earth.
Okay, sorry,
you know that.
Yes, my bad.
Yeah, God, fuck off, dude. So these fake manuscripts were, a lot of them were used to set church timelines, and a lot of them have been debunked and proven to be false. Even in their own time, they were proven to be false. But many of these documents were already in use to make Otto's claim to the throne more legitimate. So this guy built upon that real conspiracy that actually happened to say that the entirety of the Carolingian dynasty was made up, and that they added phantom time of 297 years to the early Middle Ages. So Elig based a little bit of stuff on the Glasgow chronology, sort of a debunk thing, but also the writings of a French monk named Jean Erdun, I believe. I probably said that right, or very much wrong.
That sounds right.
Jean Erdun, he was a French Jesuit and a librarian who around 1700, you know, we talked a little bit about a lot of monks forging or like creating fake illustrated manuscripts. So he believed that most of the art and literature from ancient Greece and Rome were actually 13th century Jesuit forgeries. And most of what we actually regard as Greek and Roman history never transpired. So,
wow.
You know, he had a couple backers after his death. You know, some mathematicians and like other historians sort of bought into his things. And actually a Russian mathematician did a statistical analysis of ancient text and some of his own like notions about astronomical observations. And he thought that Hardoon had not gone far enough and that Jesuits had actually forged the entirety of Greek, Roman, Egyptian, Chinese, and Arabic history, inserting nearly 1,000 years of false history into the calendar.
So like all of history does not exist and that the Jesuits made all of it up, basically.
All of it up, which again, Michael, I've seen some Tom Hanks movies. I've read Dan Brown.
Yeah.
Okay? Dan Brown didn't go far enough.
Yeah. Wow, that is quite the theory. So, you know, I actually have always wondered, like, when they say, like, oh, it's from this artist in, you know, 350 BC. And it's like, how can you be that specific about this sculpture or this painting, like,
right?
You know, we barely know
sort of
anything
unreal
about that time,
right? Exactly, and you know, it's human memory isn't that necessarily that long. I mean, we've all forgotten political lessons from like 40 years ago, for instance.
Right.
But
I mean,
yeah,
I forgot that a concert that I really wanted to go to was on Friday instead of Saturday.
Right. So nobody's perfect, Michael.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I have a lot of questions.
I probably don't have answers, but please lay your questions on me.
First one.
And I will say, I do want to thank my sister Amanda who put her history major to good use and helped me fill in some of the blanks.
Well, thank you very much, Amanda. And once again, I apologize.
So please direct your questions to my sister Amanda.
I apologize for saying that you used condoms to put makeup on, once again.
Not that sorry, though.
No, I mean, not at all, really. But
yeah.
So this guy posited this in 1991, you said.
Indeed.
Yeah, so he thought that he uncovered something that the last 1,000 years of people just missed throughout like all of the history majors and biblical studies majors.
So
and
he was building on another sort of proposed revision to the historical timeline. This one focused on the 18th dynasty of Egypt, which basically moved that dynasty about 500 years later than is currently widely accepted. So basically that the whole, like, the Queen of Sheba, Hatshepsut, who also had a run-in with Solomon in Jerusalem, this chronology basically, yeah. So again, it's kind of a lot of trying to legitimize the church and a lot of like legitimize certain like historically accepted things. But a lot of it, he used some pretty dubious science like tree ring dating and astronomical events. And this other sort of debunked.
Like, this would have to be a worldwide conspiracy theory. I mean, this isn't like, I know that we weren't quite the, you know, global society that we are now, but people still existed in other parts of the world, and you could theoretically date this stuff.
Well, the thing is, and probably he overlooked this, even though he was writing this in 1991. while the people writing in, you know, the Dark Ages, the Middle Ages in Europe, these monks making the illuminated manuscripts were, you know, bored and creating fake news.
They were probably drunk too. They made a lot of beer.
They did make beer. People over in Asia, for instance, were taking pretty meticulous records of things like astronomical events, solar eclipses and other things like supernova they recorded. So this has been pretty thoroughly debunked by, you know, a lot of just other literature. But
by everything ever?
Yeah, by everything ever. But so I just wanted to say, you know, the world changed by 11 days, but it might have been changed by between 300 and 800 years, Michael.
So was this guy like a history major beforehand, or did he just like come up? Is it like a lot of the conspiracy theories where it's like a random dude who saw one documentary online and thinks he's like Nicolas Cage in National Treasure?
So here's what it says about Herbert Illig. He was active in an association dedicated to Emanuel Velikovsky and historical revisionism, and was an editor and had his own magazine on things that really just worked to revise the chronology of the world. I don't know about his actual credentials, but he was pretty involved in pseudo-history and just all sorts of ridiculous things.
Okay, so just, you know, a stand-up gentleman. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that kind of ties in a little bit to something that happened this past weekend. It was the NBA All-Star Game. So you can see how my mind would go.
A lot of sick dunks and stuff.
Yeah, you can see how my mind would go from Phantom Time to the NBA All-Star Game, obviously.
Yeah.
But no, one of the players, Kyrie Irving, he plays for the Cleveland Cavaliers, he kind of implied that he might be a flat earth truther. and that he might that the earth was flat. And then multiple people, you know, it came out as a news story, and then multiple people or other NBA stars or, you know, other stars came out and were like, I mean, it might be. You don't know. Proving me that it's not, basically.
Oh, my God.
And so
this is one of those things that I always hear about and I just don't fucking understand it. Like,
yeah. Were you aware that B.O.B., the artist?
Yeah, I know he had gone on like a rant about it. Yeah, is it one of his songs or a couple? I think he put out a whole album about the Flat Earth Society.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of amazing that
he had beef with DeGrasse Tyson a year ago or so.
Like, I don't know. I mean, for stuff like that, it makes me understand how other conspiracy theories can happen, because if there are people living in this day and age that actually believe that, things that you can easily prove to yourself, even, it must not be that hard to believe that, you know, somebody stole 300 to 800 years of history.
Again, and I mean, again, Michael, we talked about in one of a previous episode that 12 million Americans believe that lizard people run the country and the world. 12 million Americans believe in fourth dimensional alien reptiles.
Right, but you can't disprove that, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I guess I can.
You can
disprove. I guess
disprove.
It's pretty costly. Hey, Kyrie Irving, get up into space real quick and, you know, fly
Don't
around.
Don't even get up into space. Just fly in an airplane. The only reason that airplanes, like, that can take the path that they do is because the Earth is freaking round.
Yeah, there's so much I don't understand. Like, what about gravity? What about the Earth and the Sun? And like,
what about the fact that that if it was flat, it would take you like 8 hours to get to London from New York, but it really only takes like 5.5 to 6 hours because they can go over the Great Circle. It's not that hard,
right? It's all pretty simple.
Yeah.
God. I mean, there's a lot I don't understand about physics in the world, and even I feel like maps have created like a pretty, like, I don't know, you've probably seen the West Wing episode where they kind of have like the Map Society come in and just like blow everyone's minds with how the world actually looks, and that hurt my brain. But fuck, man, like, yes,
yeah, I mean,
the moon
map projections
we went
are
there.
Weird. It's hard to project something that's round onto a flat 2D thing, but that doesn't mean that the Earth is flat.
Man, okay, well.
But, I mean, there was a story that came out that said that, like, maybe he was just kind of messing with everybody because everything he says seems to become a story. And so he was maybe just screwing with everybody.
There's no fucking way. He definitely does. And the thing is, I kind of like that, you know, we always just sort of like expect our athletes to not have opinions or like beliefs other than just like, you know, they do sweet dunks and like score good touchdowns and stuff. And like we just expect them to talk about sports. So I am always like, even like Colin Kaepernick, I hated the outrage. Like, you just shut up and play football. I was like, well, I mean, you can believe what he wants. Yeah. Like, he has legitimate grievances. As much as this is ridiculous, I love that someone like Kyrie Irving just be like, yeah, I don't know. Earth might be flat. I don't just do sick dunks. Sometimes I contemplate the universe and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I contemplate the universe and come to the really, really dumb realization that the Earth is flat.
I mean, sometimes you look at the world with the information you have at hand and you just make a fucking idiotic decision about, you know, the outcome of that information. No one's asking him to be perfect. You're just asking him to do sick dunks every once in a while.
That's probably the most true phrase about the United States right now that you could have said. Sometimes people look at the information given to them and just make a really, really stupid ass conclusion.
Yeah. And that's working out just fine for us, Michael.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Actually, Michael, that does remind me. So we've talked about conspiracy theories a little bit. I think it's important to note that's like, again, you sort of mentioned is like, you know, there's 12 million people who believe it and you kind of understand why it's so easy for people to buy into this shit. I do want to point out that, you know, sometimes crazy shit does happen in the world and there are conspiracies. Are you familiar with, you're probably not, Kim Jong-nam?
I heard something about him. He's related to Kim Jong-un, right?
Right. He's his half brother.
Okay.
Yeah, half brother. He was killed in Kuala Lumpur last week.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And a lot of times we think there's like anytime you're he's assassinated. We think like cloak and dagger, real like spy shit.
Yeah, like just some James Bond shit up in here.
Yeah, like the guy who was killed like with like radioactive poisoning because someone poked him with like the tip of a poisoned umbrella and like injected him with some shit and then he died 5 days later. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, real like spy shit. So apparently, though, Kim Jong-nam's assassin thought that she was taking part in a TV prank. So one of the suspects, nothing proven right now.
Wait, a prank where you don't murder people, but she did?
Yeah. Yeah. Like the whole point is to like goof. Oh, oops. You're not murdered. You just have like water in your face or something. Something silly.
That's a hell of a prank. You're dead now.
Yeah, oops, killed you. Yeah, you know how like clowns have that flower on their lapel that shoots water into people's faces, and then like one out of every 10 people just die.
Yeah, yeah,
because you know it's a good clown show.
It's the good clown murder.
Yeah. So apparently, two women and one man were arrested over this, but as a suspect. So this woman, she had been apparently paid to, you know, she was running around in like a Kuala Lumpur sort of like mall area, like a shopping district, and was spraying people in the face just with like harmless water. And I guess like, you know, she paid the money after it.
So wait, that's the prank? Just like, you just walk up to somebody and spray them in the face?
Listen, man, we've talked like about some weird Asian shit on this show. Like,
we have a very different definition of prank. Like, that's just being a dick. Like, a prank is something like, oh, you think something is going to happen and then surprise, something else happened. It's like, oh, you know, you think you're playing this game and then all of a sudden, like, haha, then you get splashed in the face. But it's just like walk up to someone, spray him in the face. That's just being a dick, right?
So I don't know the particulars of the prank, but I mean, one, you drew a hard line in the sand about poop pranks last week. So let's not pretend Americans have a high ground on pranks, Michael. And again, I've watched daytime TV that are just ABC prank shows and they're very bad. You know, I don't know the particulars, but she was she was spraying people in the face and then giving them money. apparently,
it's the worst. Michael, who would watch that prank show?
Michael, sometimes you spray people in the face and then you pay them money for the privilege of being sprayed in the face. So anyway, Kim Jong-nam was the fifth person that she sprayed in the face. And apparently she was like talking to producers of this prank show and they gave her a canister to go spray her next victim. And it had some poisonous substance in it, which wound up killing him. And so she had no idea, but killed Kim Jong-nam through a prank show.
Does Kim Jong-nam not have any, like, does he not have a posse or, like, security or anything?
He's not
the
half-brother
of the guy who leads North Korea.
Right. Well, I mean, I know that in America, we pay millions of dollars for our president's family to go on business trips now.
Yeah.
But I don't know financial abilities of the North Korean leadership to protect their extended family outside of North Korea.
My guess is that he just didn't care about his brother very much.
Well, I believe that Kim Jong-nam was largely estranged from his family. Okay. I think he had left a couple years ago, and they weren't necessarily super fond of each other. So,
did he get paid for being sprayed in the face with death water, or did they only pay for regular water?
I hope she threw a 10 on him and walked away, but you never know. Hopefully he was compensated fairly for his time on the TV show. That did not exist. It was just a good murder show.
Yeah, so the people who did get sprayed in the face were probably thinking they're going to be on TV at some point and just never going to happen.
No. I signed a waiver and everything.
Yeah, yeah. That reminds me of this game show that we talked a little bit about how pranks sometimes just aren't really pranks. There was this game show loosely called a game show, I guess. It was more of like
Michael,
a reality.
Did people die in this show?
No one died, but I'm kind of surprised that no one did. So this poor man, it was a Japanese reality television show. And basically they had a lottery, or like a sweepstakes that you could enter to get a show business related job. And this guy was a very young comedian. I think he was in his like early 20s or something like that. And he entered this and he won. And
great. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, you would think. But the show business related job that he was doing was that they put him on reality television and they put him in an apartment with basically nothing in it. And they made him strip off his clothes. And they said, you don't get to leave here until you've won 1,000,000 yen, which is about 10,000 bucks. And the only way
how could he win 10,000 if he didn't have any clothes and was in an apartment?
Yeah, well, the only thing that was in the apartment with him was magazines that had mail-in sweepstakes in them. So he basically had to just fill out sweepstakes until he won $10,000 worth of prizes. And he couldn't wear any. The only things he could eat or do or wear were things that he won.
What year was this?
This happened in, I believe, 1998 is when it started.
And so if he's lucky, he might have had Prodigy internet.
Yeah. I don't even know if he had internet. I think he is just
yeah,
the magazine,
just magazines?
Man. Yeah. No, he could not.
Fuck
yeah.
That.
He was
How
cut
long
off.
Was he in that room?
335 days.
Michael, what?
Yeah,
are you kidding me?
He never won any clothes that he could wear. And basically the food he subsisted on was like sugary drinks. He eventually won a bag of rice and then he won some food.
Oh, my God.
He didn't have any way to cook the rice because he never won a pot. So he's just eating like
the fuck. Did he just eat dry rice? Michael, I've entered into a handful of sweepstakes in my day, and I haven't won shit.
Yeah.
I tried calling radio shows, haven't won shit.
Well,
what in
you
the
would
hell?
Have. You would have. You probably would have starved to death.
Could he? He couldn't leave. Like I would have run through the walls, scream. I would have left a Mike Cushing sized like shaped hole in the wall.
Well, I'll get to that point.
Oh God! No, there's more.
There's a lot more.
Okay.
He thought that they were just filming this show as like a something they were going to pitch to television studios and it may never air.
Right.
Well,
so he could make it big.
Yeah. Well, what he didn't know was that they were actually airing this basically weekly. So they were following him and they were doing these weekly shows and clip shows. And he was,
they Truman Show this motherfucker.
Yeah. Yeah. Except not so much on the giving him like, a life and a family and more just alone for a year and naked.
They gave him food deprivation and complete and utter loneliness. Okay,
yeah.
Great.
So after he reached his goal of 10,000 yen after 335 days, they picked him up and gave him a big party. Oh, wait, no, they didn't. They dropped him off at an apartment in South Korea.
That's a different country, and also not what they agreed to, Michael.
They told him to take off his clothes again, and they said, hey, you're going to enter more sweepstakes until you win enough money to fly back to Japan.
Holy shit. So how much was that? How much did he have to win?
It doesn't say the exact amount, but, you know, I mean, I assume it was at least probably a couple $1,000s. And once again, he had no clothes or food, so he also had to win, in addition to winning the flight back to, you know, Japan, he also had to win stuff to eat and wear, which he didn't.
So one, I have to, like, oh man, I'm sure he signed waivers. One, I feel like this can't be legal. Two, it's not technically a game show. This is just, like, sadism reality show. Did people like this? Were people watching it?
17 million viewers every week.
What
the fuck? It broke all the records in Japan.
How have we never heard of that? Because,
well, I mean, apparently about 3 years ago, I think, there was an NPR story about this guy.
Okay.
And there's some YouTube clips about this guy. But it kind of flew under the radar a little bit for something that is kind of insane.
Completely and utterly insane. Yeah. Because, I mean, like, I think we all, like, you know, Japanese game shows are like that, like, goof, goof, they're going to do crazy shit, like, whatever.
No.
This is, and I also, and for better or for worse, I feel like American TV has a tendency to steal any idea that, like, does well enough overseas. I feel like, if it was getting 17 million viewers every week, I feel like Mark Burnett would, like, definitely figure out a way to make that a CBS, like, reality show every week.
I have no doubt that someone has tried. Like, this, I bet they've gone to, they've pitched this. They had to have. And somebody was like, yeah, no, you're insane. We can't do this.
Sorry, like, Jeff Probst, we can't do that.
Can you imagine? I mean, it's basically like, it's basically similar to Survivor, right? Except that you're by yourself in an apartment as opposed to like.
But with no idea that you're doing.
Like,
they just lied to you for the outcome. So did he, what happened? Did he ever get his break? Like.
So he won enough money to get back home. So they picked him up, they blindfolded him, put some clothes on him, and they dropped him off in another apartment in Japan.
Those motherfuckers. Are you kidding me, Michael?
Yes. So the best part about this one was they unblindfolded him. And when he realized where he was in another apartment, he basically was just like, fuck it. Took off all of his clothes and just sat down getting ready to fill out some more sweepstakes. But this time,
no,
he wasn't in an apartment at all. He was in a room that was constructed on a soundstage in the middle of a live studio audience.
Mother of God, are you serious?
Yes. So they pulled the walls away, and this poor naked man who hadn't had any physical contact with a human being other than the people who blindfolded him and made him go from apartment to apartment was suddenly surrounded by an entire studio audience and the host of the show. And he was understandably freaked the fuck out.
Yeah. Has he ever recovered from that ordeal?
Apparently it took him like 6 months to be able to carry on in conversations and didn't wear clothes for like a year because he said he was hot
Holy
and sweaty.
Shit.
Yeah.
So, Michael, we saw John Wick 2 Friday night.
Yes.
You know, to our detriment. we did a John Wick 2 mini episode.
Yep.
Episode 9.5. That John Wick is all about righteous vengeance. If someone did this to me, Michael, I don't care how long it took me to carry on a conversation or how long it took me to wear clothes. I would destroy the lives of every single one of those fuckers who pitched this show to me. I'd probably track down each one of the 17 million viewers who tuned into that show, and I would make them regret ever turning on their fucking television. Are you kidding me? I would go to the ends of the earth to destroy the lives of everyone involved in this project.
Well, this man is a much better person than you, Kush, because he said he's grateful for the experience.
What a dumb motherfucker. Are you serious?
The best part is that they asked him at the end. They said, hey, why didn't you ever try to leave? Apparently the door was not locked. He could have left at any time he wanted to.
No, Michael,
They asked him, why didn't he ever try to leave? And he said, because I said that I would do it, so I did it.
A man of his word.
Yeah.
Uncommon in this day and age.
So they called this man, his nickname was Nasubi, because it's a Japanese word for eggplant. And apparently it was because his face was very long and kind of shaped like a Japanese eggplant.
Oh, not because they had to put an eggplant emoji over his dingle dangle?
No, they did that too. But oh. His nickname came first and the emoji came next. But yeah.
Wow. Michael, I gotta tell you, I'm also a man of my word. And if you ever Truman Show me, I will come back to end you. Swear to God. Sorry, if you ever Nasubi me. Good Lord. Oh, yeah,
because I came across the story and I was like, holy. And the funny thing is I came across the story like weeks ago and just completely forgot about it until you brought up this odd Japanese game show thing.
And you just kept that under your hat for a couple of weeks? How? I would have told everyone.
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I must have come across it like on Christmas break or something when I, you know, we weren't doing the podcast.
Good Lord. Wow.
So I apologize to you and everyone who's listening that this is the first time they're hearing about this, but shit.
Dang, dog. Holy, yeah. I cannot even imagine what that guy, what his life must be like. Holy shit.
Yeah.
And now, phew, boy, I'm never signing anything in Japan because who knows what they could be lying to me about.
So when you tell me that there was a game show where people were spraying people in the face with water, I'm like, yeah, fuck you. That's not a game show.
Oh, how tame. Oops, I accidentally killed the half-brother of a North Korean dictator. I ruined a man's life. I turned him into just a walking Japanese eggplant, an Isubi, if you will.
It was actually kind of like a cross between Truman Show and what the hell is that one with Tom Hanks on the island?
Yeah, that one. It's a cross between Truman Show and literal fucking hell. Are you serious? It's goddamn hell, and the producers are the fucking devil.
Yeah. Yes.
Good Lord. Yeah. Castaway was the movie, was the Castaway. Film we were trying to get to.
Yeah. I was, you know, Wilson.
Except they didn't even give him a fucking Wilson. Did he make a Wilson? Did he create his own Wilson?
Yeah. He adopted a stuffed animal that he wanted as his sensei, and he would talk to it.
Oh, that poor motherfucker. Mm-hmm. Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, bow to your sensei, Nasubi. Good Lord. That's depressing as hell, Michael.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, he's not upset about it, so why are you?
I don't know. Well, I think I'm more upset at the fact that he's not upset. Again, I would go Taken 2 on everybody. No one would escape my wrath. Are you serious?
All right, well, so I have another interesting story that I came across this week that's kind of related to the Japanese game shows.
Oh, cool. I can't wait for this uplifting story.
This one isn't technically a game show, but it seems like it could be a game show.
Okay.
And actually, I kind of want to see it as a game show. But Kush, how would you think that if you worked at a zoo, for example, you know, you have to deal with animals all the time. They're in their enclosures. But like you hear all the time about animals escaping the zoo, you know, whether it's a little monkey or, you know, an entire like zoo gets released by some asshole. But, you know. At some point, you assume that you're going to have to wrangle a snake or a bear or something, right?
Sure, like one does.
So how would you think you would go about training for a situation like that? I mean, you can't just release a bear or a tiger or a monkey. You kind of have to train for it without, you know, you don't want to hurt the animals if you don't have to.
Right.
So how do you think you would train for something like that? Maybe watch some videos or something?
Probably watch some videos. Yeah, it'd be a lot of corporate training videos. I would probably let the animals loose in an enclosure that, you know, is outside of their normal habitat so you can kind of run drills on it.
Take a test. You know, in the military, they always talk about how, like, it's really hard to train for things if you don't actually feel like you're in danger, right? So they do a lot of live fire stuff, right? They put you in situations that's really stress you out. Well, they kind of take that same approach at this zoo in Tokyo, where they dress up one of the zoo employees like a chimpanzee.
Fuck you, dude. Absolutely not. Fuck off.
This is 100% true. They dress up one of their employees like a chimpanzee. They give him a tree branch to swing at the other employees, and they tell him to try to bite all of the other employees.
Okay. Fuck, I'm forced to ask a lot of questions.
And then they come after him and try to catch him with nets and tranquilizer guns.
Okay. Fuck. Okay. God, I have so many. So, one, do they just, like, draw straws for the poor asshole who has to be in the fucking suit?
They actually don't say how they choose him, but I assume that it's somebody who did something very terrible.
Yeah, that's my least important question. Okay. I mean, do they do this for all the animals? And actually, fuck, I know they do because I just looked it up and there's a picture of a dude in a, like, knockoff Tigger costume lying on the ground while a police officer points a trank gun at him. So fuck this, Michael. Okay.
You'd have to do it for all the animals, right? You don't want a Harambe situation where you have to shoot the animal. You want to be able to take them peacefully. And you're probably not going to shoot your own employee.
Right. Okay. Well, here's the problem. So they gave the chimp, the actor playing the chimp, a giant stick and just told him to hit people and try to bite them.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, first of all, a human man moves, or a woman moves, a lot slower, presumably, than a chimp. They're about three times larger than a chimp. They're about three times larger than a chimp and about a tenth as strong.
Yeah, that is true. I have seen Planet of the Apes. Yeah.
They also don't bite people's fucking faces off. I don't care how, like, oh, oops, yeah, bite Charlie on the arm. It'll, you know, it'll really teach him a lesson. No, a chimp's gonna go fucking rip your fucking face off.
I know, I mean, maybe,
because people in America who keep chimps as pets get their fucking faces ripped off.
Do they? Is there, like, a rash of chimpanzees eating faces that I am unaware of?
Oh, Michael, I'm sorry. I forgot that you haven't lived in Florida for a couple of years. Yes, people in Florida get their fucking faces ripped off by chimpanzees.
There are chimpanzees in Florida?
What they do. Not, well, there are privately owned chimpanzees in Florida. But actually, that reminds me, one time I went kayaking on the Silver River or Silver Springs in Ocala, and a monkey almost bit my face off.
Was he swinging a tree branch at you as well?
No, he was not, actually. He was in a tree. There is a small colony of, I believe, macaques who live in the trees around the Silver Spring State Park. Bit of an apocryphal story about how they got there. One, it was either escaped monkeys from the Silver Springs, like, park zoo they have there, or there was a movie being filmed in Ocala, Florida, and the movie had monkeys on set, and rather than transporting them away from the movie set, they just let them go into the woods around Silver Springs.
Oh.
So now. So now there are about 40 small, like, macaque rhesus monkeys living in the trees. And so we were going kayaking, and normally they're quite peaceful. They just jump around the trees, and you don't get too close to them. But on this particular day, they were right on the edge of the shoreline. So I was with about 8 friends in kayaks, and I was the first one to the shore, and people sort of filed in around me and blocked me in, and I made the mistake of, while wearing sunglasses, I made eye contact by accident with a male monkey, and he did not take too kindly to that. He became viciously enraged and started throwing himself
sensed your manliness, and he was like, this guy's a threat.
Yeah, well, it's funny you said, because almost immediately upon him, like, throwing himself, like, his body towards me and screaming at me, I flipped the fuck out and started screaming and, like, smacking my paddle on the water and pushing people out of my way, but I couldn't go anywhere because I was penned in by 5 kayaks. Luckily, he didn't jump out at me, although I did have visions of catching him with my oar and slamming him into the water, which would never have happened in a million years. He would have just jumped into the boat and ripped my face off.
Probably didn't rip your face off because you may or may not have screamed like a little girl, I assume.
Yeah, well, at the time, he was also screaming, but in, like, a much more manly and threatening way.
This guy's a threat, and then as soon as you started freaking out, he was probably like, oh, I clearly overestimated this man.
Yeah, very possibly. Here's a little Trends in Low Places PSA. Don't make eye contact with a fucking monkey. Don't do it. They don't like it. Also, don't smile at them. They don't like it.
Yeah, so I just looked it up, and apparently there are between 150 and 400 rhesus macaques in the Silver Springs area.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in Costa Rica last year, and I really like monkeys, and so I tried to find monkeys anywhere I could, and basically every day I was in Costa Rica, southern Costa Rica, we saw monkeys, and they were very nice. We went on a little kayak tour, and we saw some monkeys. They were more of the, I don't think they were rhesus monkeys. I don't remember which kind they were.
Well,
but
Michael, let me ask you a question. Have you seen a squirrel, like, out in the wilderness?
I mean, yeah. Yeah.
What do? They run away from you.
Yeah, correct.
You ever seen a you ever seen a squirrel on a college campus?
That's a good point.
They're fat motherfuckers who want your food.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Monkeys in a tourist location who rely on you to give them food and to steal shit from you, they're going to be pretty friendly.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Monkeys in the wilderness, just who happen to live on a river where they shouldn't be, not quite as accommodating to human beings.
It says they might be kind of territorial.
Yeah.
And have been known to jump onto boats to rummage for food. So maybe he wasn't going to eat your face necessarily as long as you had other food for him.
Well, one, I didn't. Two, my face is technically food.
That's true.
My face is technically food.
You were definitely going to get your face eaten.
Yeah, so I didn't. But back to these fucking idiots in Tokyo. Like, again, chimpanzees are 10 times stronger than humans.
That is very true.
Nothing you're doing is going to prepare you for an actual, like, escaped animal.
Maybe they picked the strongest person in the zoo to be the chimp. Like, there's a Terry Tate office linebacker version of the zoo staff.
Yeah, just choo-choo, boom. Well, I want to assume that maybe not all zoos do this, and it's just like the Tokyo Zoo. But again, I see a lot of pictures of just men in, like, off-brand tiger outfits just lying prone next to officers with trank guns, which, again, seems, one, like a poor way to train, two, a pretty bad employee appreciation day, and three, just a bad way to train. It's one and three are the same.
Well, Kush, I don't know how many places you've worked at, but inevitably there's going to be one person, at least one person at your job that everyone hates.
Sure.
And you can't tell me that if you could dress that person up like an animal and hunt them down with a trank gun that you wouldn't do that. So Employee Appreciation Day? It sounds pretty good to me.
Right, Michael. I'm not saying I wouldn't go all purge on a shitty coworker, but as far as this training will perhaps one day save my life, I wouldn't want fucking Jerry in the post, like the post room, being the fucking chimpanzee. I'd want a fucking chimpanzee.
Well, yeah, but the problem is if you let a chimpanzee loose and then he actually does eat somebody's face, that is a story that you got to deal with at that point.
Michael, I'm not saying it's not a logistical and legal nightmare, but fuck, there's got to be a better way than fucking have Jerry swinging on a rope with a tree branch in his hand. I don't care. Sorry.
Well, we'll just have to agree to disagree on this one.
All right, well, when your face gets eaten off by a rabid coworker, because you weren't ready for it, don't come crying to me, okay?
Oh, shit, speaking of rabies.
Pray tell, please go on.
So there's an article in Science Magazine. So this isn't like one of our random articles from like the Daily Mirror or something. This is from a real journal here.
Fake news.
They're trying to treat brain cancer with rabies. How do you feel about that, Kush?
I mean, having watched Old Yeller a time or two, I don't cherish the thought of perhaps having to take a loved one out back behind a shed and putting them down, but I do know that rabies has some neurological effects, so, and again, as has been made abundantly clear, I'm not a scientist, so Michael, lay it on me. What's the deal?
Yeah, well, like you said, rabies kind of is a unique disease that targets very specific areas of the brain, right? It basically goes into your nerve cells and your brain tissue. Well,
okay.
Some scientists thought, hey, since it has this ability to kind of like go in there and affect your nerve cells and brain tissue, maybe we can kind of weaponize this thing.
Oh, God.
Into nanoparticles.
Oh, wait, okay. Weaponizing it to kill. Okay. God, I thought we were just going to kill more people with rabies. Okay.
No. Weaponize it against cancer cells, not against like people.
A good weapon.
Yes, like a good weapon. Yeah, they basically use it to bypass the blood-brain barrier, which is something that is not very many medicines or anything can actually go through that blood-brain barrier. And so,
right, because the particles of the medicine are too big to pass through the membrane of the brain.
Right, right.
I read books too, Michael.
So that barrier actually prevents a lot of treatments, like normal cancer drugs, from reaching the infected cells for brain cancer patients.
Okay.
So, you know, put some rabies and some nanoparticles and just inject that thing right into some cancer into your brain.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it doesn't really... Science. And the thing is they don't really carry any drugs necessarily.
Right.
They put these... They have these little... It says, the particles don't carry any drugs, but the tiny gold rods readily absorb laser light, which heats them up and kills surrounding tissue.
Michael, would you sign up? We talked about, you know, maybe slightly experimental treatments. Last week, we talked about male birth control. Would you sign up to have rabies shot into your brain if you had brain cancer?
If you presented it to me as we're going to shoot rabies into your brain, I probably wouldn't. But
right.
If I had a little more detail, I probably would. I mean, it makes sense. Now, I'm not a doctor, but
what
they're doing sounds like it makes sense.
Okay. Well, to be fair, you were fully on board training for animal attacks with humans in animal costumes. So I don't think your judgment can be trusted whatsoever, but I think
Fact check myself a little bit. So they're basically using the rabies surface protein to help these nanoparticles get in there. And then they're kind of taking a step further from that and removing the protein altogether and just trying to shape the particles like the rabies proteins so that they maybe don't have to use the rabies surface protein anymore, which is, I think, is a great idea because, look, I'm not saying that zombies exist, but at some point, if we keep putting things into people's brains that are like rabies, that maybe we might create zombies. And I'm not on board that.
We're playing with fire, for sure.
Exactly.
And clearly people are already betting people, as evidenced by my barber from a couple weeks ago. Like, people are getting bit for shout.
Oh, my God. There was this article I read, I think, earlier today, where this guy was in, like, I don't even know what it was, some kind of like satanic cult where he like killed like 4 people and tried to make them come back as zombies.
Okay.
Luckily, no. It does not sound like it worked. But
so I'm pretty sure we've given didn't pan out for that guy. You know, we've given some props on this show to the Satanist church as just being like semi chill folk, but hey. Maybe knock it off with the zombie bullshit,
yeah.
Assholes. Well, Michael, speaking of people creating unholy new things, have you heard that the American Girl Doll Company just released a boy doll?
Oh, well, that sounds nice. I mean, it seems like it'd be cool for boys to have something that they can...
Yeah, sounds great. You'd think so, unless you were Asheville pastor.
Oh, yeah? Yeah.
So let's talk about it. So the American Girl Company just released its first boy, American boy doll. And Michael, are you familiar with American Girl?
Yeah, I am a little bit. My wife Rachel she's told me about these American Girl dolls before. She had one that I think is kind of inappropriate, but she assures me that it's not. A little girl named Addie, who was born a slave girl at 9 years old and then escaped slavery. So seems a little old for like white girls to own black girls who used to be in slavery. But, you know, that's just me.
I will say, while the optics on your wife's doll are not super great. So the American Girl doll collection, my sisters had a bunch when they were kids. They are sort of lifelike dolls. You know, probably like 2 feet tall, maybe. They're very lifelike. They, you know, their eyes closed. They're, you know, all over the place. But they're dressed in garb. They all have a persona. So most of the dolls are launched with a backstory tied to historical significance. Like, you know, one was a settler. Right. One lived through like New York during like Prohibition, something like that. And they were also made to look like little girls. So, you know, my sister had one that had red hair, just like she did. My older sister had one that had brown hair. So, you know, there's reasons to buy them. But so about $115, but they all had like, you know, they came with a book series and, you know, usually a prop. So you could fill out the story around that. You could learn something. So, Michael, if you had to guess the backstory of the first American boy doll, where would you land?
Oh, man. I mean, they usually do some kind of historical significance. So, I mean, my guess would be like, you know, maybe he was like a newsie or maybe he existed in like the early 1800s or something.
He played the fife in the American Revolution, maybe?
Yeah, yeah, may, Yeah, maybe he's a little drummer boy or some sort.
Yeah, something cool. Well, I have bad news for you. The first American boy doll, his name is Logan Everett.
Oh, boy.
And he is a Nashville drummer.
He's a drummer from Nashville?
Yep. And his outfit is
In the very now.
He was launched along with a girl doll named Tenny Grant, who is a singer-songwriter in Nashville. But Logan wears a t-shirt that says Play It Loud and some a plaid shirt and some Converse Chucks. He's a goddamn hipster, Michael.
Oh, my God. Like,
the first, the most historically significant boy doll they could come up with is a goddamn Nashville drummer.
I mean, I guess it makes sense. You were talking earlier about, like, your sisters bought dolls that looked like them.
Right.
And I think if you're trying to target the little 4- and 5-year-olds and 6-year-old boys, you probably are targeting hipsters, because those are the people having children right now.
I mean, that's fair. Well, while I might disagree with the choice of Logan specifically, other people have a more nuanced take and say that the American boy doll Logan is killing the minds of male babies by killing the minds of male babies. Yes, Michael, apparently the release of Logan, the lone boy among the American girl's vast collection of characters, is that this is nothing more than a trick of the enemy to emasculate little boys and confuse their role to become men. Such are the words of Reverend Keith Ogden of Hill Street Baptist Church in Asheville, North Carolina, who has 100 supporters.
So is his problem that they made a doll at all that was a boy or targeted at boys? Or does he specifically have a problem with drummers from Nashville that he thinks they're not men?
Unlike you and me, who think Logan sounds like a bit of a goober.
Yeah.
He just thinks little boys playing with dolls isn't cool. And we need to get back to old school values and morals.
But
boys shouldn't play with dolls.
But boys play with dolls all the time. Have you seen a G.I. Joe?
Fuck yeah, we do.
It's just a doll.
Yeah, Michael, it's called an action figure.
Yeah.
Maybe you fucking heard of them.
So if we call Logan action figure, his kung fu grip on those drumsticks...
Introducing Logan Everett. He's got chill beats.
But like drummers, I mean, no one's ever accused a drummer of not being manly. I mean, they're the ones who usually get all the girls, right?
I don't know. I'm not a drummer. I don't know anything about getting girls. Sorry.
I thought the drummers were like the bad boys of the band, right?
I think they're
maybe
like
not
the,
a Nashville drummer. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know the deal with Nashville. I think the drummer is like the aloof bad boy,
right,
who just kind of plays it cool and lets the ladies come to him.
Yeah.
The cool ladies.
Yeah.
While everyone else is flocking over the singer or the guitar player. He's just out there. He's just having a beer, relaxing.
Yeah, but you would think the pastor would have more issue with him being like a singer, because sometimes the singers are like the flamboyant performer, like a Mick Jagger
Are you implying that Logan fucks? Just pretty low key. He just fucks pretty good.
Logan Ben fucking.
Well, Ogden's chief complaint is that it just doesn't make sense. It's not natural for a boy to act like a girl. It's not natural for a girl to want to be a boy.
Yeah.
And so apparently playing with dolls, which I've done a couple times.
Yeah.
And not just ripping the heads off my sister's Barbie dolls for fun.
Oh, no. No, I had a friend. If I had a friend in elementary school and middle school, that we played Barbies all the time. I mean, it's this absurd notion.
It's more of a give and take situation. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about fragile masculinity before, but if your masculinity is so fragile that your kid can't play with a doll that is a drummer from Nashville or any other doll, then like you have issues. Like,
right.
Your kid plays with things that look fun.
Right. The biggest problem with Logan is that he's just kind of a goober.
Yeah, I mean, he's...
That's about
he's
it.
He's definitely moving to Brooklyn and gentrifying a neighborhood, for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
People can't play dolls, apparently, Michael. Or boys can't play dolls, which...
Oh, well, yeah,
...is upsetting to me, because my entire desk is full of dolls.
What kind of dolls you got on your desk, Kush?
Let's see. I have a couple wizards. I have a Spider-Man.
Hey, be careful with those wizards. I hear that their robes are full of poop.
Well, actually, the one I have is Cartman from South Park dressed as a wizard.
his robe has been known to poop himself.
Yeah, I have some Minecraft toys. Yeah, I got all sorts of stuff, man. It's nice. It's a growing menagerie of dolls. Yeah.
I don't have any dolls. Looking around, the best I got is a rando garbage dog.
Wow, you're such a slave to the patriarchy, man.
I know.
Get some fucking dolls up in there.
I have a Florida Gators beanie baby at work. Does that count?
Count it.
Nailed it.
Yep. Well, Michael, now that we've explored all of Logan's goobertude, anything else we need to talk about today?
No, I am looking.
If you have nothing, there is one thing I'd like to talk about very quickly.
Okay, yeah. Lay it on me, buddy.
Okay. Michael, are you familiar with the show Jeopardy?
Yes. I love Jeopardy. I used to record it and watch it like an old person.
That's great. Well, apparently right now, or the earlier tonight, there was a rap category on Jeopardy. the category was Let's Rap, Kids.
People always do so well in the rap categories, let me tell you.
Right. Well, as we all know, Alex Trebek is pretty hip. He's pretty with it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's how I would describe him.
He's a hip cat.
So this category, he's a real hip cat. So Alec decided to do a little, spit some rhymes today.
Oh, no.
On Jeopardy. I'd like to play you a little bit of it if you don't mind.
Oh, please do. Yes, please, please, please.
I adjure and have a doctor on speed dial, I guess. Mad City. 6'7", 8' bunch. Young Money Militia, and I am the commissioner. You don't want to start wheezy because the F is for finisher. Panda.
Oh, my. Oh, God. Can I have just like a half hour?
Pretty
of that?
Good. Yeah.
Yeah.
I want nothing but Alex Trebek rapping at me.
Was that all one clue or was that like a mashup?
Because that was three clues.
Okay. I was gonna say the first one sounded like Kendrick Lamar. The last one was definitely Panda. And I was like, I don't know what song this is that he's going for.
Right. he's got some game.
Yeah.
You know?
He spits mad fire, if you will.
Actually, give me one second. I got more.
They mad, they ain't famous. They mad, they still nameless. But we still would famous. Yeah, we still would favorite.
So hearing...
See, he put a little bit to it on that one.
Oh, my
one.
God.
He,
hearing he, Alex he, Trebek say hood famous is quite amazing, actually.
Yeah. You think he's just a, you know, vanilla dude from Canada. Mm-mm. But no. Guy's got a bit of an edge to him, huh? Didn't see that coming.
Did any of the contestants get any of those answers right?
I don't know. I'm only seeing clips on Twitter. I can't. I would assume so. But it just, you know, Alex didn't lose his edge when he shaved that mustache off. That's all I'm saying. Guy's got game.
Dude, I believe that Alex Trebek would fight a bitch if he had to.
I believe that Alex Trebek, if he ever hears this podcast and hears the story of Nasube in Japan, will personally fly over there and end the lives of everyone involved in that production. Because that's a fucking travesty and an outrage. I don't mind telling
just
you.
Just going to go Liam Neeson's on him.
Yeah, someone has to. Jesus, I want to. Fuck off. Well, Michael, I think that's going to do it for us on Trends in Low Places. We'll ride out the door on Alex Trebek's dulcet tones. We mentioned our John Wick podcast, our emergency episode from the other night. That's about 12 minutes long if you're feeling feisty and want to hear about... me and Michael chat drunkenly about John Wick 2. Michael, what else can people look out for us?
Well, people can find us on iTunes or your favorite podcast app, Trends in Low Places. You can search for us. And when you find us, rate us, leave a comment, give us some feedback. You can also find us on Twitter and Facebook at TILPcast for both of those. Or you can just find us on our Podbean page at Trends in Low Places. And don't forget to look for our sister podcast, Longest Days of Our Lives, where we are recounting the first longest day of Jack Bauer's life, day one. It's season one. And we'll be going through all of the seasons and all of the longest days of Jack's life. And we'll be doing that with our friend Curtis Perry, who you've heard on a couple shows here at Trends in Low Places.
Yeah. And Michael, we have a friend of ours who is designing a logo for Good Buddy Media. She has a podcast too, right?
Yes. My friend Marissa does a podcast with her friend Katie. It is called MNK Talk YA, where they will be talking about young adult dystopian fiction. They'll be doing half of a book with each podcast. Their first one is Cinder, The Lunar Chronicles, which is not really sure what it's about, but I assume it's about the moon. But I bet you know what it's about, Kush.
I have an inkling. I think my sister has read it because she reads a couple hundo books a year.
Ooh.
Yeah, girl reads a bit. So I believe it is a futuristic retelling of... So the Lunar Chronicles are a futuristic retelling of classic fairy tales. Cinder, obviously, as you might imagine, focuses on Cinderella as a cyborg living with her stepmother and two stepsisters. And that sounds fucking rad as hell, by the way.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. Yeah, so the first two episodes going over that book are up right now, and highly suggest that you listen to them and you know, read the book to follow along, or just listen to them because they're also very good, funny people.
Yeah. And before we go, I do want to give a shout out to one, all of our listeners. We just this past weekend crossed over 550 downloads of Trends in Low Places, which is frankly incredible. Our fan is listening to this show a lot.
Yeah, basically 24/7.
Yeah, nonstop. But I do know that we have one friend living behind the Great Firewall of China who goes to great lengths to listen to this show and The Longest Days of Our Lives with our friend Curtis. So I want to give a special shout out to our friend Chris living over in Shanghai. Hey, buddy. Yeah. Love you.
Yeah. Hey, Chris. How you doing, buddy? We do have one download from China, which makes me wonder what Chris did to be able to get our podcast through the Great Firewall.
You might have goofed up and shown your hand to the state, my friend. So check your VPN settings. Yeah. And I will say that in the initial recording of this episode, we tried to anonymize your name and Michael accidentally called you the C word. So sorry.
It wasn't the best. I said two words together that probably shouldn't ever go together when trying to... create a what do you call it when you switch the first letters of everyone's name, of people's names?
I don't know. Pseudonym? I'm not a...
No, it has a name. It's my job to know words,
but...
Yeah. It's Spoonerism is what they call it. Spoonerism.
I'm 100% convinced you made that up, but if you
No, it would be like if I said no, I'm not gonna spoonerize your name because that would be bad too. Holy crap. Say it in your head, Kush.
Definitely.
Yeah, don't do that.
Yeah, definitely don't do it. Anyway, guys, I think that'll be it for Trends in Low Places, episode 10. We made it to 10.
TILPX, friends. X gonna give it to you.
Michael, thank you. Son of a bitch. Michael, thank you for joining me as always. Everyone, thank you for joining me again. Michael, have a great night.
You too, buddy. Love you.
Love you. Toodles.